Let's start. First of all, a reminder, as promised in the beginning, we're going, in the first class, we're going to have a class photo today. Class photo, no, that's not how you spell that. Photo today at, what is it, 9:55. So 5 minutes before the break, we'll take a break and take a class photo, okay? And let me remind you where we are. So, you know what? Even before that, let's do a bit of a locator map. So, one of the advertised goals of this class was to go over a certain 3x4 grid in which we had three classes of knots, U knots, V knots, and W knots, and in fact there are maps between them. And each class of knots has a topology, a combinatorics, a bit of combinatorics, a bit of low algebra, and a bit of high algebra. And the idea was to cover as much as possible of all of this for all the classes of knots. And we're still very modest. So we only talked about U knots. U knot stands for usual knots. We haven't mentioned virtual knots or W knots. And we've done the topology is kind of an overstatement because there is a huge amount of topology of U knots to talk about, but we've done more or less as much of the topology, or we've done some of, no, we even have, okay, we've done a part of this, and we've started dealing with the combinatorics, and we're going to say more about the combinatorics as we go today, and maybe towards the end, we'll start venturing into the low algebra, but if not, then it will come soon after. Okay? So this is just locator map, where we are. Okay? And now a quick more specific locator, where we are in a different sense. So we've defined invariants of type N, and let me give a name to the space of all invariants of type name, of type N. So Vn will be the space of the vector space, or if you are over an abelian group, then the abelian group A, then it will be the A module of all invariants of type N. Now, just to be clear, from this point on, I'm completely forgetting about unframed knots. So unless I say something else, there is a handout to pick up for people who just came. So unless I say something else, this means invariants of framed knots. If I want to say something else, I will usually put the superscript R. So if I put R here, it means reduced. It means you reduce modulo Riedemeister 1. So this will be the same for unframed knots. Okay? Now, Vn is a filtered space. Okay? Because Vn contains Vn minus 1, an invariant of type n minus 1 is in particular also of type n, and it also contains Vn minus 2, and so on. So it's a filtered space. And here is a different way of saying the things that we said so far. If you look at Vn, then Vn minus 1 maps into it. In fact, it's an inclusion map. So it's one to one. So in the language of exact sequences, this is an exact sequence. Okay, or so far it's an exact sequence. Now, if you look at Vn and ignore invariants of type n minus 1, that's exactly the weight system. That's exactly the nth derivative. Okay, so this is the space that I will call Wn. Okay, and Wn by definition is the space of all n derivatives of invariants of type n. Okay, so by definition, this is onto. Okay, so we have an exact sequence like this. But what we said last time was that Wn is contained in the dual space of Dn, where Dn is the space, well, I think I made it a set last time. There is a handout to pick up here. I think I made it a set last time, but now let's make it a space. So it's the vector space, or maybe the A module, depending if you're over a field or over a group. So it's the vector space freely generated by all chord diagrams with n chords. Okay, so it's a vector space whose basis is this. Okay, now Wn is contained in this, but we could say something a bit more specific about what it is. So the fundamental theorem, which we haven't proven and we're far from proving still, okay, says that Wn is the dual of An, okay, where An is a certain quotient of Dn. So its dual is the linear functionals of Dn, which satisfy certain additional relations. So it's a subspace of Dn dual. Okay? So where An star is An modulo 40. Okay? And I guess I want to tell you again in another language what 40 was. So let D1 up sub n be the space of diagrams of the form, so it's like chord diagrams, except they also have one exceptional structure in them. Okay, so they will have one T shape somewhere. Okay, and then in addition to that, n minus two chords. So n minus two chords and one T-shape, okay? And then there is a map, let's call it the boundary map, which goes from Dn1 into Dn0, and it's the map that maps the T-shape to the four ways of resolving it. So symbolically, it maps this into this minus that plus that minus that, okay, keeping all other chords in place. And then what we said last time was that An is equal to Dn, or maybe I can call it D0n if I really want, okay, modulo D1n. Okay? And finally, well, not finally, forever, I mean, finally for this sequence of definitions, often we define calligraphic A to be the direct sum or even the completed direct sum, so of all An. So, I mean, direct sum just means that you allow linear combinations in which you mix degrees, okay? So you allow combinations in which the number of chords is not fixed. And completed means that you also allow infinite combinations of that kind, provided you only have finitely many, provided nothing in fact, just infinite combinations. Okay? So this is as n goes from 0 to infinity. Okay. So, okay, and then the next thing is that I want to quickly go over a handout that I made in, I think I made it in 2000 or 2001, but this printing of it is from 2003, in which I just explicitly compute A up to a certain degree. And the only reason is just to make it clear that A is something concrete, it's not something abstract. Okay? Or it can be made concrete. So here you go. First of all, I load the program, and then I introduce the notation. Okay? So the notation is, well, unfortunately it's around the circle, and the sites around the circle are not labeled in the little pictures. Okay? So, nevertheless, I need an eraser. You know what? Come to think of it, well, okay, let me introduce the notation just once. Never return to it again. So a diagram in which you have a chord from 1 to 3, a chord from 4 to 6, and a 4T relation at position 5 to 7 would mean that you mark the circle 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, oops, 7, and it should be uniform, or more or less uniform. And then you put a chord from 1 to 3, a chord from 4 to 6, and a T whose tail is at 5 and whose legs are at 2 and 7. So hopefully when the computer prints it, it prints it right. So let's see. So is this the same as that? Up to a rotation, I think it is. Okay? Anyway, after that I asked the computer to print the boundary of this. So this is a little program that I wrote a while ago. And the boundary of this will have, well, the feet of the T, or what should we call it? Not the feet, the neck maybe? Okay, the part before it connects to the head. Okay, so the neck of the T can shift to the right. Right, and if it shifts to the right here, okay, if I shift the neck, I suppose in this picture it would be to here, I just get, this becomes a picture like this, right? So you get this picture, okay? And I suppose my signs are probably opposite from the signs over there, but it's the same picture. Then you can bring the neck over to here. If you bring the neck over to here, you get basically a chain of chords of length 4. So this will be one of the terms over here, one of the two here. Then you can bring the neck to over here, and I think this is again a chain. No, this would be this picture. And then you can bring the neck to over here, and that's again a chain of length 4, oriented the other way. But once you rotate the circle, it's the same, so that's the other term here. Okay? So basically you can combinatorially generate all of these, therefore compute all their boundaries, therefore compute this quotient space. Sorry, I should have written here not D1n, but B of D1n. Okay? Now let's do it systematically. So first of all, in degree 1, there is only one way to place a single chord on a circle, this is this way, okay? So, so this is D1, 0. D1, sorry, so this is D0, 1. I mean, this is this space when n is equal to 1. D1, 1 is empty because you cannot place a t and then n minus 2 chords because n minus 2 would be negative 1. Okay, so this space is empty. So the quotient is simply this space again. Okay? Meaning, if I make a table, then for n, if I write for different n's what is dim a n, then for n equals 1, dim a n is equal to 1. For n equals 0, I suppose I skipped it, dim a n is also equal to 0 because the only is also equal to 1 because the only diagram that you have is the empty diagram and there are no relations. Okay, if you believe the fundamental theorem, then, which you shouldn't because I haven't proven it yet, but I don't know, I hope you have some faith, but then there should be a single finite type invariant of type 0. Which one is it? So, what's the corresponding invariant?
Everything is mapped to 1.
What?
Everything is mapped to 1.
Everything is mapped to 1. Right, so this is just the constant. All nodes are equal. Okay? And then, if you differentiate it even once, you get 0. So, therefore, it's of type 0. Okay? This is more interesting. The dimension here is 2. Is 1. What is the unique invariant of type 1, which is not also of type 0? Okay, of course, if you have one invariant of type 1, you can always add to it stuff of type 0, and you still are in type 1. Right? But what's the new invariant of type 1? So remember that I'm now thinking about framed knots,
right.
And that invariant should die once I go to unframed knots because the framing independence relation will kill this. So it must be the right. So this is the right. Indeed, what is the right? Okay, the right is a single summation over the crossings of the knot of plus or minus 1. Okay? If you take a single crossing and a knot that has a single double point, then this double point will go to over minus under. I guess it's the other way around, but it doesn't matter. Okay? All other crossings are unchanged. So in the computation of the right, all terms will cancel except for the summand that comes from this crossing. Well, this summand will be plus 1 for the overcrossing and minus 1 for the undercrossing. So the difference will be 2. So, the right evaluated on any knot with a single double point is 2. So it's constant. So its derivative is 0. Okay? So this is the unique invariant of type 1. Okay, let's go on. So I'm asking the computer to print all the diagrams of degree 2, and there are only 2. So there are at most 2 invariants of type 2. Okay? Let's print all the relations of type of degree 2. Well, there is only one way to place a T symbol and 0 chords, and this is this way. okay? If you apply B to this picture, well, let's do it. So, if you apply B to this picture, it goes this minus that plus, well, in fact, the exact same formula, sorry, I don't know why I'm doing it. It's the exact same formula that's written here. The only difference is that here I meant there are more chords around, okay? And the further chords may make this diagram different from that diagram. But if there are no chords around, no further chords around, then these two are equal, so they cancel. And these two are equal, so they cancel, so there are no relations. So when n is equal to 2, there are two invariants of degree 2. Okay? And just as an aside, what are they? So this is actually tough. One is the Rife squared. So, like polynomials, if you, you know, if you multiply two polynomials of a certain degree, you get a polynomial of whose degree is the sum. So, the same will work here, and we will later show it or explain it. Okay? So, so one invariant will be the Rife squared, and the other invariant will be the second coefficient of the Jones polynomial. So take the Jones polynomial or the Alexander polynomial, it doesn't matter what you do, and compute its second coefficient, so it's the second derivative if you evaluate it as a function of x. Okay? And I'll continue computing dimensions, but I'll stop writing the invariants because it gets messier and messier. Okay? Anyway, let's go to the first place where it's interesting. So first of all, in degree 3, there are 5 diagrams with 3 chords. They're written over here. There are also 6 relators. They're all drawn over here. It might be difficult to see on the screen, but you have a copy in front of you. If I compute B of each of these, well, many come out 0, okay? But you're left with a few non-zero things, such as what is written here. And then when you compute the linear span, it turns out that the linear span of these is just two-dimensional. So A3 has 5 diagrams minus 2 relations, and this is three-dimensional. And I think that's as far as I want to go in detail. So, you know, if you look at chord diagrams with 4 chords, you get 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, I don't know, lots of them. Okay? And many more relations, or also lots of relations, but the difference between the number of chord diagrams and the number of relations is 6, and therefore, in degree 4, you get 6 invariants, and then you can keep going this way, and at some point your computer will crash, but if you write better programs and don't bother printing the output, and in fact use more knowledge that you still don't have, it's been computed up to degree 12. So in degree 5 there are 10 invariants, in 6 there are 19, and so on up to 548 in degree 12. And that's all I want to say about this. Okay. Now, DAN is not known, and there is a proposed generating function, but the evidence for it is very weak. So there is a proposed, you all know what a generating function is. So there is a proposed generating function for this. But this generating function was written by essentially, well, guessing a certain form and then adjusting all the constants so that the form has constants in it. So you adjust all the constants so that the number will match up to degree, I don't remember if it was adjusted up to degree 10 or 11, But, and then there was a match in the grid well. So there is some evidence, but it's not a lot of evidence. Okay? But basically, the function is itself a monster with lots of free constants in it. Okay? Questions, comments? Okay. If not, then, so I still don't want to... I still don't want to prove the fundamental theorem. The proof of the fundamental theorem, you know, will involve either differential geometry or physics or high algebra. So it's still in the future. But before that, still, I suppose, at the level of combinatorics, I want to tell you that the space A somehow reflects the structure of the space of knots. So A is in some sense the double dual of the space of knots. Okay? So the dual of the space of knots is the space of all knot invariants. Within that space, we're looking at polynomial invariants, which is, you know, conceivably almost everything, or conceivably it's a big chunk of that space. Okay, Wn is more or less the space of polynomial invariants. It's the nth derivatives of the polynomial invariants. It's more or less characterized as polynomial invariants. And then An is the dual of that. So it's the double dual of the space of knots. So whatever structure the space of knots should have, An or A may have the same. So I want to show that this is indeed the case. So theorem, A is a commutative co-commutative bi-algebra. Okay? But in order to prove this theorem, I have to define all the notions that appear in it. But I want to sort of have something done before coming up with fancy definitions. So for now, ignore co-commutative and ignore the bi-algebra. And I will only prove that A is a commutative algebra. Okay? Where is it coming from? It's coming from the fact that K, which is the space of all knots, is, what do you call it when something is a group, but, how should I say that? Has a group operation without an inverse. That's a semigroup.
Monoid.
Maybe monoid. What's the difference between a semigroup and a monoid?
I think semigroup has identity, or the
a
other
monoid
one has
doesn't.
Identity.
The monoid has the monoid is right.
I
so
don't.
Semigroup doesn't, and
maybe,
monoid does.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's just okay. Let's call it a monoid. Okay. But what I mean by that is has an in fact, sorry, I should say an abelian monoid. So it has an a commutative associative product denoted sharp with unit, but maybe with no inverses. Okay, and I hope this is the right definition. This is the right name. Okay, anyway, the operation is clear. So you know what, maybe even before that, let me make another comment. So you see, when you write K, I don't have to, maybe a more complete notation will be K of a circle, okay? So the ways of noting a circle. But I don't have to note a circle, I could just note a line. So maybe an even earlier claim is that noting a circle is the same as noting a line. Okay, so a typical element here will look like the trefoil, and a typical element here will look like, I can never do the trefoil. Will look like a thing like this. Okay? So, why are these the same? So, first of all, you can clearly map knottings of lines to knottings of circles by taking the line. Oh, sorry, I should say this is usually called a long line because it's not just an interval. If it was just an interval, you could just pull its end and untie it. When you say a long line, you mean a line whose behavior at infinity is fixed. So, say at infinity it goes, at minus infinity it goes the same as the negative x-axis, and at the plus infinity it goes the same as the positive x-axis, and all the knottings happens in a compact subset, and also all deformations will happen in a compact subset. So infinity is fixed. Okay? Anyway, if you want to go from here to here, you just close it. You go outside the compact set where all the action happens, and you close it, and you get a knot of this type. Okay? And if you have a knot of this kind, you can bring it to be of that kind, or you can find an inverse operation by choosing an arbitrary point, okay? And this is the point where you want to cut it out. So first of all, you pull that point to until it's out, okay? And then you sort of add things so that it will look like a long line, and you've cut it out. Okay, so this is the this is this isomorphism. Anyway, this is clearly a monoid. You can compose two such things by just putting them one after the other. It's more fun to see. Why is it abelian? So claim this is an abelian monoid. So why is it abelian? Why is it that if I have one knot K1 and another knot K2 and I put them along and I compose them, why is it the same as K2 followed by K1?
In the middle, like between K1 and K2, place the point at infinity in the middle between K1.
Place the
what? In the first feature, you can place the point at infinity between K1 and K2 and kind of trace it first K2, then K2.
Yeah, but I would like to see a sort of simple pictorial way at this level, okay? Yeah?
You can shrink
one? Yeah. So basically, shrink K1 until it's tiny. Okay? So now, if this is K2, K1 is tiny, tiny, tiny over here. Then you can slide it along the line. You basically shrink it so that it's smaller than the smallest feature that appears inside K2. Then you slide it along the line, it comes out the other side, and then you expand it back again. Okay, so this is why this is abelian. Okay, Okay, so I claim that the same goes for A. So, I think, well, at some point later, we will see that the structure of K forces a certain structure on A. Okay? But before that, I want to, before the abstract way of forcing structure, I want to just argue by analogy without being precise. Okay? So, claim number one, A of a circle is isomorphic to A of a line. Okay? And I guess I have to be precise about the meaning. So A of a circle is what we've been talking about all along. So it's pictures like this, modulo the images, or modulo 4T relations, so modulo the images of pictures like this. Okay? A of a line will be the same, except that you replace the outside skeleton by a line. So it will be pictures like this, a line with chords on it, modulo the images of, again, lines, but these lines are allowed to have a single T on them. So the T now looks like this, and then further chords. Okay? So, proof. Well, the map going from A of a line to A of a circle is completely obvious, right? If you have a diagram along the line, you can just close it. You can just close the line, and you get a diagram along a circle, and clearly the relations get mapped to relations, so it's well defined. So this map is obvious. Okay? The map going from A of a circle to A of a line is also obvious, except it's not obvious that it's well defined. So the map will be, well, you pick a core diagram, you choose some point along it, and you cut it open. So you cut it open at that point. So, right, that point becomes the ends of the interval. Okay? But what is not obvious is that if you choose the orange point to be somewhere else, it's not obvious that you get the same answer. Okay, so it's not obvious that if I move orange to here, I'll get the same answer. Okay? Now, what's the effect of moving the orange point one unit? So, so I have a certain core diagram. Okay? And suppose I want to move orange from where it is now. So right now it is here. Okay, suppose I want to move it to here. The effect of that will be to take this interval, cut it out from here, and move it there. Right? So the effect of that will be to move this chord end from here. So instead of being here, it will go here. Okay? So, claim if you have a picture like this, a good number of chords, one chord shoots up to infinity, then the two ways of connecting it, either at the very left or at the very right, are equal. Okay? Does the statement make sense? And is it clear why the statement proves this claim? Okay. This is sort of the first harder, or it's not very hard, but it's the first sort of deeper calculation that we do with finite type invariants. So here is the proof. What you do is you put little, you know what, let me do it on a new blackboard. Let's do it here. So you start from your original chord diagram with the one chord shooting up, and then you near every vertex you mark two hooks. Okay, you mark two points, and you put one with a plus sign and one with a minus sign. One with a plus, and then basically you alternate signs. Plus, minus, plus, minus, plus, minus, plus, minus, plus, minus, plus, minus. Okay? And then you let S be the sum of all ways of connecting, I don't know, let's call the end here E, just for end, of connecting E to the hooks taken with signs. Okay, so it's, you connect E to here, take it with a plus sign. You connect it to here, take it with a minus sign. To here with a plus sign, to here with a minus sign, and so on. Okay? Now, there are two ways to resum S. There are two ways to write S. Okay? So, oh, you know what? I think I want to skip these two. It doesn't matter. I mean, they're anyway equal. Okay, in both cases you get a short chord, sort of a tiny chord, one with a plus sign and one with a minus sign. But let me, they don't matter, so let me drop them. Sorry. So, there are two ways to rearrange this sum. So, first of all, you can think of it as a certain sum in which you go over the other chords, and each other chord has four hooks around it, right? Each other chord has two ends, and near each end there are two hooks. So it's a sum over other chords of a sum over four hooks per chord. Okay? But if you look at the sum of the four ways of connecting E to these four places, to these four hooks with signs, it's exactly the 4T relation that used to be written here. Okay? So, modulo 4T, so this is a sum over other chords of 4T relations, but we are in A, and in A we model out by 40 relations, so this is zero. Okay? But there is a different way of organizing the sum S. So on the other hand, it's equal to, sum over the intervals along the skeleton. And again, on each skeleton interval, so let's write it this way. So you sum over intervals along the skeleton, okay, plus, so for on each interval there are two hooks, so two hooks per interval, plus there are a few exceptions, okay? The interval at infinity on the right has only one hook. The interval at infinity on the left has only one hook. And there is the middle interval, which is somehow exceptional. So plus exceptions. Okay? But let's figure out what we get. So, well, if you look at the typical interval simply has two hooks on it, nothing in between, and the hooks come with opposite signs, so they cancel. But if you connect E to here or to here, combinatorially it's the same diagram. Okay? So the first term drops out, so we get zero. Plus, now let's look at the exceptions. The exceptions are, well, if E connects to the plus here, you get a short chord which cancels the E that connects to the minus here, which is again a short chord. So in fact, that's not an exception. Okay, so this cancels as well. Plus, the remaining terms are the two sides of my equation, of what I want to show. The remaining terms are this minus that. So I've shown that the difference is equal to zero modulo four term relations, and we're done. Okay. How much time do we have before the photo? Oh, negative 2 minutes. Okay. So, Karine, let's take a break and